Welcome to the Storycraft Cafe. Come in, grab a cup of your favorite beverage, and get ready to join the storytelling conversation. Storycraft Cafe is brought to you by Dabble, the ultimate cloud-based fiction writing software. Here we're going to bring together storytellers from all walks to encourage and empower you to craft your best story. Thank you for joining us again here in the Storycraft Cafe on this most auspicious day. When we're doing this live, an hour, 2 hours away from the beginning of the great eclipse of 2024. And, if you've been on the internet for the last few days, it could be a scary place today, but not here, because we are your harbor, your safe harbor from all the internet chatter today. Joining me, as always, for these fireside chats, Douglas Lansborough, my friend, my companion, my compatriot here at Dabble, and we are going to talk today about some of the biggest mistakes that new authors make. Doug and I have both spent time as new authors, and I can't speak for Doug, but I know I made plenty of mistakes. And as you're finding your way through writing, storytelling, and then publishing, and there are lots of victories to be celebrated, but lots of wrong turns as well. So welcome, Doug. Thanks for joining me today.
Thank you very much. I'm very excited to be here because I also made many, many mistakes. I continue to make mistakes, which is something I kind of wanted to preface this all with, is that these are the mistakes to look out for, not necessarily the mistakes to freak out over if you've made. Right. This is, you're going to make these mistakes. You've made these mistakes. Maybe you can identify them and help course correct, or maybe you can avoid them altogether. But again, safe harbor. Don't freak out. This is a fun conversation to help people out here.
Right. And I don't think any of these are deal breakers. If while we're talking, you say to yourself, "Oh my goodness, I've done that," or "I am currently doing that," these are just opinions. These are just things that we have seen, may or may not affect you. But hopefully, these are things that you can reflect on and maybe judge is not the right word, but compare your writing journey to ours and just see if you can get any benefit from our stories. Anyway, Doug said, nothing to freak out about, just a fun conversation. I messaged Doug earlier today and I said I had kind of a hot take that I wanted to start with. And the more I thought about it, when I first thought about it, I said, this is going to be inflammatory on the surface because it kind of goes in the face of advice that I've gotten from a lot of people. But the more I've thought about it, it's not as inflammatory. But this hot take is, and I'm just going to start with this, you are not required to sit down and type every day. And I've gotten this, especially when I'm talking to journalists who have become fiction writers. And I always ask them, what did your time in journalism teach you that you have brought over to writing fiction? And I'm always looking for some brilliant insight that these people have gleaned from their time. And invariably, 99 out of 100 people all say that their time in journalism taught them to work under a deadline and to put the seat of their pants in the chair and do the work, get the work done. And they built great writing habits, and that has served them well. And I'm not here to refute that. But if you listen to the show that I did with Dan Kinney a couple of weeks ago, I think we talked about the importance of sometimes taking time to yourself and just thinking. And I would argue that that is writing time, even if it's not typing time. So while I say that you're not required to sit down and type every day, I would argue that that is writing time well spent. So a bit of a hot take. What do you think about that, Doug? Am I off base? How do you receive that?
Well, I'm sure you're probably getting like a handful of nasty emails right now just for speaking those words. No, and it's funny because just for anyone listening or watching, like I think some shows when they say that they've brought these items together individually, they actually share them before. No, Hank and I did not share any of our stuff before. I just got a heads up about a potential hot take. And that is like adjacent to one of my things that I'm going to talk about later. But I think the writing every day applies to some authors. And because we're talking about new writers today, writing your first book, even your second, you know, third, you can consider yourself new however long you want. You don't need to write every day. You don't, like, this isn't a job. This is still you're passionate about it. It's a hobby. You're doing it in your free time. You don't need to make sure that you're sitting down and typing out 2,000 words a day because you want to be like Stephen King because you just read On Writing, right? Like you don't need to do that. If the 10 years from now you're 15 books into your career and it's actually your primary income, then we have a different conversation, right? Then it's your job and you can still be passionate about it, but we all do our jobs, you know, 5 days a week, 7 days a week, 4 days a week, however many you get to do it. So then it's different. But for new writers, I really don't want people to feel like they're failing because they haven't sat down and written X number of words Monday through Saturday or whatever they want to do. Right? That's not fair. And I say that being keenly aware that sometimes I can come off like that, both in our shows and our writing, but it's about identifying where you are in your process. And if you're just starting out, chill.
Yeah. In my mind, I hoped that you would just be adamantly opposed to that, throw a sheaf of papers in the air and storm off the set.
Sorry to disappoint. But again, if you're not a new writer, then think about it differently.
Right.
But like, we're doing this for fun. If it's your first book, especially if you have learning to do at the same time.
Exactly.
Just treat it like it's fun. Treat it like it's supposed to be.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree. I no argument there. And okay, so that's the hot take out of the way. What piece of advice or what mistake what's one that you've identified, Doug?
So if we go to the one that is adjacent to what we just talked about, I have here going too hard too quickly. And like if you're anything like me, patience isn't really your strong suit. I'm aware of myself enough to know that I can be impatient about some things. And so in our head, if you want writing to be a career, or if you want it to be a substantial part of your career, you want to go hard. You want to go as quickly as possible. Yeah. And you'll hear stories about very successful authors, maybe writing 5 or 10 books in a year, like their first year doing it. That's great. That's awesome for them. That's not the norm. So I don't want new writers to get this idea in their head that if they aren't doing exceptionally, then they're failing. And I think too many people think that. So like, embrace the journey, take the time you need, learn from your first book, learn from your second book, make mistakes, and just don't burn yourself out and don't disappoint yourself.
Right. That's great. I have something that I jotted down that is adjacent to your item that was adjacent to mine. And that was, how did I word it? Where was it? Not knowing your audience and not knowing what your audience wants. I interviewed someone a couple of weeks ago, who put their head down, wrote like 8 books in a series, before stopping to ask does anyone want this series? You know, or have I, you know, have I honed in on my desired subgenre, and then have I identified the tropes that exist for that subgenre, and am I serving a particular audience with this book? And that is not to say that everything has to be market driven, but he did all of this work before wondering if anyone was going to read it. I mean, and you know, I've said this before that it's we all feel like we have a story to tell, but if no one is going to read that story, then what good is the work that we've put into it? I mean, it may be a cathartic experience for you as the writer, but then that's just for you. That's not necessarily something that needs to be published or shared with an audience. If it's just for you, then that's amazing, but maybe that's a journal. Maybe that's not a novel. You know, asking yourself those hard questions. And a lot of times, I know the first book that I wrote was purely for me. It was self-serving in all of the ways. But that was, you know, maybe that was some things that I was dealing with and I just needed to talk about them. And writing that first novel was a way for me to talk about those things and get them off my chest and kind of clear my mind. It wasn't necessarily for a worldwide audience. You know, but once I got that out of my way, I was then ready to tell someone else a story. But that first one was me telling myself a story. Does that make sense, Doug?
It does make sense. And I think any new writer needs to figure out what it is exactly they want to do. Because as far as I see it, you kind of have three options. You have the cathartic route, which you just touched on, and you can journal, or you can, you know, build a Dungeons and Dragons world, or you can just write a book that only you and your partner or your mom will see, right? Sure. Or you can tackle it saying, this is my first of many books, and I'm passionate about writing, and I want to develop my writing skills. I think that's going to be the vast majority of people who watch this or listen to this or who go to W and read the articles. I think that's most people. Then there's other people who identify publishing and writing as an opportunity for marketable things, to make an income right away. And you get those kinds of people who do write 8 books in their first year with, ideally you do the market research beforehand, but you fall into one of those three groups. And so figuring out where you are in that group can help with audience identification, or at least inform what you should do. And to be honest, I think no matter which group you fall in, like homework that I give every writer in every article that we publish almost is just read your genre, right? We all love reading anyway. So the more you read, the more you identify what tropes work, what character archetypes work, what plot structures work, what stories are good and bad and themes resonate and don't resonate. Like that reading is part of the writing journey. Because you are not the best writer in the world. I'm not the best writer in the world. Like, I meant you generally, but Hank, I don't think you think you're the best writer in the world. Like, no one is the best writer in the world.
Right.
So learn from others.
Absolutely. Absolutely. One that I have jotted down here, talking too much about your work in progress. Oh, this is something that I used to be terribly guilty of. I would write a page and I would really work on it, and I just loved the language that emerged from that writing session. And I was so clever the way I said that, and it was so crafty. And you know what? Let me just screenshot this page and let me post it on Facebook, because everyone needs to see how brilliant a writer I am. You know, most of the time, people just don't care. And you know, let's be honest. And you know, that's one end of the spectrum. The other end of the spectrum is if people are awaiting this new work from you, don't spoil it. Don't leak stuff out there because you can't keep your mouth shut. Just, you know, keep working on the story, get it perfect, and let it unfold in the way the story is supposed to unfold for the reader.
Yeah. And I think there are people that you can share your work in progress with or share updates about it. Like I'll rant to my wife about stuff that I just wrote, and she'll sit there and she'll smile and she'll think, this isn't, you know, a Sarah J. Maas book, but I'm very proud of my husband for writing it. And but I appreciate that, right? I'm here to get feedback, either positive, you know, reinforcement or beta feedback or whatever, from select groups of people. But when I started my writing journey, I was very much in that boat where I'd type a page and then I'd hop on Twitter and I'd be like, here's a line, hashtag WIP, hashtag indie author, hashtag, which social media has a place in the writing journey. It can have a very strong place in the writing journey, but not when you're more obsessed with sharing the fact that you just wrote a page than actually writing the story that you want to write.
Yeah. Yeah. I first started writing and publishing in 2013 to 2014, somewhere in there. And it was just at the end of the first wave of the Kindle revolution. So we had started collecting all these stories of people that had just quickly written a story, designed a cover in Microsoft Word, didn't edit it, you know, threw it up on Amazon, made a bajillion dollars. Bam, they can retire now. And and so you had this follow-up wave of all of these people that decided, I'm going to write a book too, and I'm also going to design a cover in Microsoft Word, and I'm going to be rich. And, you know, then the Kindle store was flooded with all of these really terrible books, terribly presented books. And, you know, there's a blip on the sales charts, and then they all just blew away with the wind. And so, you know, a lot of people are, I've heard a lot of back and forth arguments about how AI is basically going to do the same thing to publishing and flood the market with all of this. And, you know, that's another discussion for another time. But we've seen these waves come of people that are just here to game the system. And you're invariably going to get all these bandwagon people that are going to jump on to try to make a quick buck. And then you're going to have the people over here who are, you know, head down doing the work, producing quality content, and those people are going to last. Another one I have is try not to think about the trends in writing and chasing the latest trend. And I don't mean thinking about the market for what's selling and serving your market well. That's not what I'm saying. I'm talking about the trends in publishing, the trends in chasing a particular way of doing things and a way of publishing, that ultimately is just going to lead to frustration.
Yeah. And for new writers, especially, if you aren't writing authentically, then you aren't going to grow. You're not going to become a better writer. You're going to become a clone, a subpar clone of some other writer, right? Like some cheap imitation. So really look inwards and focus on what you want to write and use like your passion for it. Use what excites you about it to make yourself learn more and to become like the author you want to be, rather than the author or writing style that's hip for the moment.
Right.
And again, that kind of differs as well. I think analyzing the market differs when you become a career author. Then you can think about writing to market more, but do that after book 10. Or after book 15 or after book 20, like book one, book two, just write what you want to write. And then you can take feedback later about, you know, this character doesn't work for this genre, and you can do some tweaks to that. But don't think that you have to take every trope that's popular right now and every romance arc that's popular right now and every, you know, dragon or whatever that's popular now and cram it all into one book and think, I got a bestseller here.
I would also caution, if you're a new writer, caution about getting too deep into the conversation about indie publishing versus traditional publishing. I think when you're writing that first book, that's probably information that is not serving you well at the moment. Like you said, pour your heart into that book. Learn to craft a great page. Learn to tell a story in an engaging way that's going to draw people from page one to page 400 and make them not want to put that book down. And then worry about what's the best way to publish them. Because if you have a story that stands on its own and moves you and you believe will move someone else, the way that you get that out to the world literally may change on a daily basis. Try not to get too mired in the kind of internal conflicts that writers love to, plant flags, on hills. Those things change. We're talking about an art form that's literally thousands of years old, and the waves come and go. And
now it's funny, and I don't know if this is pushing back against that idea, a fireside chat first, perhaps, but in my own journey, I decided early on that I wanted to do indie publishing, that I wanted to self-publish. And because of that, I spent too much time on Twitter connecting with other people who were also self-publishing or planning to. And so the mistake was spending too much time on Twitter. And the mistake was maybe learning more about indie publishing than I had to 3 years before my book was written. But doing that allowed me to connect with others that helped me grow personally and professionally. So I think you're right. I think I just kind of lucked out by by getting on that indie train early in my writing journey. It benefited me. But you don't necessarily need to be making commercial decisions when you're starting page one.
Right. If you don't have a book to sell, and I agree with what you said, that because I also have made lasting friendships built around indie publishing and built around, kind of authors banding together to fight the system, and those things need to be done. But I also have lots of great friends that are in the trad world. And that just happens to be the path that has best served them. But most of the time, those decisions that really mattered were made after the book was written. And like you just said, have page one written before you start really worrying about where the book is going to go and how it's going to get published. I think your counter argument is completely valid.
That's the most disagreement we've ever had.
Doug's from Canada and I'm from the South. We're both very cordial. So
we'll apologize after this. Kind of branching off of that though, one of the mistakes I have written down here is people thinking that writing the book is the entire process. Right. And no matter if you're indie publishing or traditional publishing, writing the book is part of the process. And then you're rewriting it and you're getting feedback and you're doing editing and marketing and cover design and websites and so on and so forth. Like there's a lot. There's so much that we could do 15 episodes about the different things that you need to do. Writing a book is the most important part for a first-time writer, but there will come a point during that draft, even maybe like 50% of the way, 75% of the way, where you need to start thinking ahead, I believe, to what the cover is going to look like, or, am I going to start sharing this on social media? So I don't share the one page done today, work in progress, but maybe as we're getting into the third act, I'll start engaging more in, Instagram posts, or I don't know if they do hashtag games on X anymore. I used to do them all the time on Twitter I left that platform. But like, there will come a point where you have to understand that the book isn't the only thing that's involved with writing. But don't jump the gun.
Yes. There are lots of things that are vying for your attention, and there are lots of things that are good things to do that will rob your writing time. And you can argue at the end of the day if it was a good thing to do, and yeah, most of the time they are, but you have to talk about what best serves the novel and what best serves your writing process.
Yeah.
So yeah, I completely agree there. Here's one I jotted down, and this is not necessarily for new writers. It absolutely is for new writers, but I think it applies to writers across the board as well. Try not to believe all of your one-star reviews and all of your five-star reviews. You know, because you can get 100 reviews in a day on a book, and if you do, that's amazing. And you may have 90 very positive reviews, and you see that one-star review, and it will wreck your day. You know, and from the outside looking in, you're like, this is one negative review. You have all of these people that loved it, but human nature is to focus on that one negative review, and it can just completely ruin your confidence. So try to weigh them, or if you're completely brilliant, don't read your reviews at all. I've heard some people say, I don't read reviews at all. Okay, that's a great thing to aspire to. I've never not been able to read reviews, you know, but try to keep them in balance. So the one stars can be day wreckers. A lot of times it's people that just don't understand what you're trying to do. They're not fans of your genre necessarily. And you think, well, how did they even stumble on my book? This book was not for them. And it's obvious it was not for them because they didn't get it. Okay, that's one thing. Another thing to watch out for is try not to believe all of your own hype. When everyone is raving about how brilliant you are, you know, maybe read the 3- and 4-star reviews to maybe get a better grasp of, okay, people are enjoying this, but maybe this didn't quite work for them. And maybe I can take some constructive criticism from someone who obviously likes what I did, but maybe it didn't completely resonate with them. So what can I as a writer take away from that? And that's why I say don't believe all the 1-star or 5-star reviews. Kind of try to look in the middle there. If you're wanting to do more than have your ego stroked, if you want to actually learn something from your reviews, the 3- and 4-star, sometimes a 2-star, are really where you can glean some helpful information from.
Yeah, and I view reviews in a couple categories. So the 5-star are the I want to feel good about myself today. Let's go read a 5-star review,
right?
Kind of thing. Like it fills me with joy. I will never not be a review reader.
Exactly.
The 3- and 4-star are so much more helpful than the 5-star reviews. Even if someone means super well with a 5-star review, and again, I love them, keep leaving them because they've helped me, they helped the books. But 3- and 4-star reviews will say what they liked and generally what they didn't like. And if you get recurring issues, then you can address them in future work, or you can see, okay, some people didn't like this, but more people liked it, or some people liked it, but more people didn't like it. And you can use that to adjust what future characters and stories are like. 2-star reviews, they can be helpful. I've seen one or two. Generally, in my experience, they're more, hey, I really didn't like the book, but I don't think it was god awful, so I'm not giving you a 1-star. And then 1-star, a 1-star is almost, in my experience, both from my own books and from reviews I've read about other people's books, 1-star reviews aren't necessarily a reflection of the book itself. It's more a reflection of how disappointed a reader was because expectations weren't set properly, or it's just a mismatch. They thought, hey, I'm going to love this book, and then they ended up not liking it. I downloaded a book on my Kindle once that I thought was going to be a ghost story, and it was a paranormal romance book. and I still read it. I didn't leave it a 1-star review. I think I left it a 4-star review. But like I went in with different expectations.
Right.
And that some people just don't like that. And they'll blame you, or they'll take issue with you personally, or they'll take issue with one scene. I also had, before I monopolize all the time, I had a review left on a book that I co-authored that had a real problem with how our main character was beat up by a vampire. And it sticks with me because they said, quote, "He was beat like a redheaded stepchild," which was a term I'd never heard before. And, you know, being a redhead myself, it stuck with me a while. But like that, as a writer, I identified that scene as very important in character development as for that particular reader, because no one else mentioned this scene. They just didn't like that. That turned them off the book right away. They closed it. They didn't finish it. You can't win with everyone, right? Yeah. You can't. And don't think that you're ever going to get all 4 and 5 stars. Don't try to appease everyone. Just write your book.
Right. That brings me to a follow-up question that I just thought of. Because indie publishing allows you full control over the book that you present for sale to the world, how do you feel about editing and re-releasing a book? Say that, for instance, you get a ton of 3-star reviews and it becomes pretty evident in the review process that, you know, people are not resonating with this because maybe I didn't do a good enough job with X, Y, or Z. I'm working on my Canadian.
I didn't even notice it.
You know, so maybe I take the book, I re-edit it to fix a problem, and then re-upload that book. How do you feel about that possibility? I haven't seen it done much, but I have seen books that are like on the Amazon store list, you know, re-edited or whatever the word might be, you know, just updated or whatever. Yeah. What do you think about that?
So I think there are two possible ways to go about it. One of them I've actually done. And I think a traditional publisher would do this too in like a reprint. But I had in my first book, it slipped through the editor. It slipped through me. But my character, instead of covering their ears with their hands, covered their hands with their ears. And it, you read through it so quickly, most people would never spot it. But right. Someone did, and it haunted me. So, of course, because I'm self-published, I go in, I change the ebook, I change the paperback, and I re-upload them, and we're good to go. People who have it on ebook will automatically have it updated. People right. who have it in paperback, congrats, you have a collector's edition.
Collector's edition.
For those things, like if there's a pure just error, grammar yeah. error, spelling error, that's fine. I think that's A-okay. When it comes to a big revision, like if you change a character's arc or if you completely yeah. redo a chapter or something, if you want to upload it and say, you know, re-edit it or revise or whatever, more power to you. I've more seen people realize that something's not right with their novel, especially their first novel, take it off the market, go through the process again, and then upload it brand new. They might say in the description, you know, new and revised or whatever, but you don't want, because especially for self-publishing, if you're just learning how to write and you don't necessarily have the budget for a line editor or developmental editor, you're going to make mistakes in terms of your story structure and your character arcs and all that stuff. So if it means you have a better likelihood of enjoying the process and writing your next book, if you have to take down your first, do another 6 months of work and then re-upload it, do that, right? I don't think there's enough self-published authors who sell a million copies of their first book for right. that this not to be the case. Odds are you've sold 20 to 50 copies.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
So
yeah, I tend to agree with you there. The covers his hands with his ears. That's a simple revision, re-upload. Chances are, almost no one is going to know that you did that change.
Yeah.
And you don't need to advertise that. That was something that you just corrected. But if you're dealing with a character's arc, or there's a major plot hole that you overlook that now you need to fix, I think you almost need to treat that like a separate book. I think that needs to be pulled down, republished, maybe even republished with a new title if there's that much of a disparity. I think you really need to treat that as a separate product almost.
Yeah. And honestly, coming up with a new title or new versions of your title is part of self-publishing marketing. Like my first book was called Archangel, but I later learned that Amazon really likes when there's, you know, keywords in titles and subtitles and whatnot. So now the ebook version is listed as Archangel, a dark fantasy adventure. The title doesn't say a dark fantasy adventure. Like the cover page doesn't say that. The title inside doesn't say it, but that's part of marketing. And I think I'm drifting a little too far away. Like new writers shouldn't be thinking about this kind of thing. That'll distract you to no end. Come up with your best title and just go with that. But like there's a lot of opportunity for fixing mistakes after that publish button is hit. But at the same time, I guess don't give yourself too much leeway with that. Like you should still be editing, revising. You should be, if you're self-publishing, paying for a copy editor to go through that. If nothing else, pay for somebody to make sure your spelling and grammar are on point. Because it's something like 70% of customers will just close something if it's filled with errors. So
The next thing I have written down is one that I'm gonna offer with a qualification. And it's what I wrote down is editing too early. Some people will want to keep revising the beginning and never tell the story. So a lot of people will really want to nail that beginning or middle or you know, whatever part, and they'll keep going back and revising and revising and revising until they just never write the book because they're so worried about sticking that beginning. And openings are crucial, but maybe that's something that you worry about on your second draft or third draft. But tell the story and then worry about fixing the story. Now, having said that, when I write, I tend to, especially if I'm really in the thick of it and I'm doing daily writing and really, you know, staying in the mindset of telling the story. When I come to a writing session, I'll look back over what I wrote the day before, and I'll, you know, fix commas and fix spellings, or if something, you know, in the heat of the moment made sense, but then when reading back over it, I'm like, what was I even trying to say? This doesn't even make sense. You know, fix those sorts of things. And that helps me get back into the flow so that when I get to the end of what I wrote yesterday, I can pick up and carry forward from there. That's just my preference. Some people will say, don't even look at what you wrote prior. And especially if you're an outliner, you have an outline to go by. You know what you need to write in today's writing session. So don't even go back and look at what you wrote yesterday. You know, there's time for that, you know, when you go to your second, third, fourth revision, whatever. That's when you deal with that stuff. I appreciate that. And I hear what people are saying. I'm not quite able to do that. Now, I don't go back to the beginning and rehash everything, but I do use, you know, yesterday's writing to prime today's writing. So I say that with a little bit of a qualification, but you do need to move forward, keep the story moving forward. If you're just constantly rehashing, you know, that those first 10 pages and you've still got 390 to write, you're not doing yourself any favors. Your first draft will never be perfect. And maybe the real title of this one should be, realize that there are more than one draft that have to be written, and you have to have a full draft written before you can revise that. You know, and I forget who said it, but it gets quoted all the time that you can't edit a blank page. You have to have something written to then be able to edit and to really mold and shape into the book that it one day will be. But you have to have something written to get there.
Yeah. And I think a lot of that can be solved with, to use an unsexy term in something creative, is having a process. Like, and you don't, for a new writer, like we said, you don't need to write every day. You don't need to have something super stringent, but say to yourself, okay, before today's writing time, I'm going to look at what I wrote last time. Use that to inspire you. Use it for some small fixes. For myself, I'm actually working with someone to get feedback every 2 weeks. So before I send it to her, I'll spend Sunday or part of Sunday revising what I wrote the last 2 weeks. And that's when my revision time is. But I don't think, like, the issue with continuing to go back and revise over and over again is that you'll never get it perfect, and it's taking away from your writing time. And writing time is precious, especially for new writers. So if you can come up with a process that says, okay, I'm writing at this time of day, but then on Thursday at 7 p.m., I know, you know, the wife and kids are out, and so I have half an hour to myself, then I can revise then. Right. But don't let it impede your writing progress. Or you're right, you'll never write the next 390 pages because you just physically don't have enough time. There are only 168 hours in a week, something along the 164.
Something like that. Yeah.
Something like that. Right. If you only have 7 hours a week to write and you spend six of them editing what you've written, then you only have 1 hour a week to write. That's not enough to finish a book in less than a few years.
Right. It's not enough.
I do have one here.
Okay.
And I think this one's important, especially for myself. Okay. And it's thinking that passion is the only thing you need. Now, I want to preface this the same way you did, in that passion is extremely important, especially for new writers. Yes. If you aren't super excited about telling a story, why are you doing it in the first place?
Right. I would argue that it will show in your prose.
Yes, absolutely. Right. If you're writing something because you need to, or because you say, I've never written a book, but I'm going to write to market, it's going to come off clunky and bad. But you also need to understand.
And readers will see it as a money grab, and they will run far from you.
The few readers that you get.
But
you need to understand that passion is a driving force, but it is not something that can actually finish a book on its own. You need to realize that you're going to burn yourself out if you think that passion is the only thing that's pushing you forward. You're going to get bogged down in the second act if you just thought, hey, I have this really cool story idea, type. Right? For new writers, be passionate, but commit to writing 500 words a week, or outline your story or the major beats of it so you don't get bogged down, or have a support system so you can bounce ideas off and get excited and reignite that passion while still getting feedback on your ideas. Like, have you ever lost passion while you're writing a story, Hank?
Oh, yes. Yeah. And sometimes it's that you need to take a break because you have other things vying for your passion. Maybe you've got, a serious family problem that needs to be taken care of before your book becomes priority, or maybe you lose passion because you had a brilliant idea, but you hadn't really thought through the implications of that idea and how, once you get to page 300, where does the story go now? Maybe you are super white hot about the idea, but hadn't really thought through the execution of it. And, that's happened to me several times where I had to go back to the drawing board and realize that I was not prepared to write this thing that I was really excited about.
Honestly, I think it happens to me like once a book. At least I think there always come a time where like you're super excited to start and then you realize that a book is 80,000 to 200,000 words long, and at word 70,000 you're not necessarily as excited. The story is still great, you really want to finish, you will be excited again, but like the competing priorities, you just need a break. It's just, it's a lot of work. A lot of things can eat away at the passion until it's smaller, like an ember instead of a fire, I guess. Right. So it's still there, but I think if you put in the work ahead of time, or you at least identify that things can happen and be prepared for that, then you kind of protect it so that it doesn't diminish as much as it does, or it can come back strong again once you've dealt with what needs to be dealt with.
Yeah. And to kind of tag on to that one, I wrote one of mine in my list is not enough conflict in your story. And I kind of left that kind of trailing off there because what I was thinking about is specifically having characters that readers care about, and then identifying, knowing what your character wants and needs, and then placing obstacles in their way so that you begin with a likable character, someone that readers latch onto and care about what happens to him or her, but then identifying something that they want or need, and then placing things in their way so that the reader cares about how this character is going to resolve a certain thing or a relationship that is just beyond their grasp or whatever it is. But having characters that have no emotional depth or no challenges that are identifiable makes for boring reading. No one wants to read about Superman when there's no kryptonite around. You've got to have something that adds to the vulnerability of this character. It's the eclipse. I can't talk today.
No, but I completely agree. Like I relate to it because new authors, especially I have the tinged view of thinking about fantasy more than anything else, because that's sure. what I write. But when I started my first book, I thought, okay, I have this really cool idea for this story. And the idea was for the external conflict, right? The big overarching thing that our protagonists are facing. I had no idea when I started writing how important internal conflicts were. And right. I more or less lucked out in that some internal conflicts just naturally developed along the way, which I think they will. Whenever you challenge a protagonist or a character of any sort, you will find those conflicts. But now your characters are so much more effective if they have something external to face and they have something inside that they deal with. Right. It doesn't have to be like some demon from their past or something. It could be a flaw that they have that happens to come up in the story. It could be a relationship that just ended and they're looking for love. Like, it can be anything, but if they don't have it, it does make for a very boring character. And I'm starting a new D&D Dungeons and Dragons campaign tomorrow that I've created for my characters or for my players. And I got them to make their characters and send their backstory to me so that I can incorporate it.
Oh, I love it.
I had to prompt them, almost every single one of them, to say, okay, what is your character conflicted about? Like, if you want to play a nuanced character, because no one wanted to play, you know, the Superman paladin, just chiseled jaw, light shining from them kind of thing.
I was about to ask you if you had a paladin in the group. Yeah.
No paladin this time around. We have some pretty nuanced, dark characters in it, and I'm excited, but you can't have that if you don't have some kind of internal conflict. And yeah. Luckily they were open to that. And we had some good back and forth. And so the same goes for a story though, right? D&D is just a story played out, yeah. But you need that conflict. You need to understand conflict and you need to write it into your story.
And that's probably why we've seen the rise and popularity over the last, I don't know, maybe two decades of grimdark fantasy, where we don't have a bright, shiny paladin that runs in and just slaughters everybody and saves the day. You know, people tend to really resonate with characters that are maybe not good people, but find themselves in a situation where they have to fight for what's good and right in the world, even out of their lack of good qualities. And that makes for a great story. You know, someone that is flawed and broken doing the right thing. That's what we all hope to do, I think, in the world, is, you know, our flawed and broken state, that maybe we can, you know, make a difference in the world. I think that's maybe why people resonate with those types of stories.
Yeah, we don't read things to read about perfect people doing good things to pad their own ego.
Yeah, right? Because we're not perfect readers reading those stories.
No. And I guess tying it back into D&D, there was the movie Honor Among Thieves with Chris Pine and et cetera, et cetera. The characters themselves, the whole main cast, were not great people. They were all deeply flawed people. But then there was the one character that they run into who is a paladin. And his whole character is more or less a joke because he is super cool. He does very cool, you know, sword fighting. He's a very, very like fun to watch character. But he's so goody-goody. He's so, I'll do this for you and I'll smile while helping all the villagers. And there was a reason that he was only in it for, you know, 20 minutes instead of 2 hours. If he had been in it the whole time, the humor would have been lost. It would have been a pain.
And can I just say what an excellent film version. You know, there have been many media tie-ins over the years that have just stunk. And that was such a great execution of bringing that material to the big screen, for sure. Absolutely, if you haven't seen it, you should. I think it's streaming everywhere. I've got a couple of other things on my list, Doug, but I think we've kind of hashed through everything I wrote. Do you still have a topic or two on your list?
Nothing that we haven't touched on specifically. I think, I guess, just on the topic of that last one about conflicts, a lot of the things that we've spoken about have been outside of the craft of writing.
Right.
About processes and marketing and all that kind of stuff. I think new writers should dedicate some time to enriching themselves in terms of their craft. Like, you will do that naturally through writing. Like, that's practice, and practice makes progress, as I've heard some people say. But you don't know all the things you don't know, and there's a lot to not know when it comes to storytelling, in terms of character development, theme, conflict, dialogue, just pure grammar rules. I say that as an editor. So take some time. Honestly, each week, if you can afford it, even if it's an hour a week, head on over to W. We have 400 plus free articles there, all about the craft, and use that to buff yourself up. And again, I go back to the homework about reading more. The more you read, the more you'll just absorb all the stuff you should be doing.
Yeah. And many of those W articles are extensive and thousands of words. We're not talking about just little clickbaity articles. These are serious deep dives into the topic that's talked about. It's really a valuable resource for writers.
I strongly suggest it, at the risk of sounding salesy. We do not skimp on the words. The word count has never been an issue. It's if the quality is there, then we write it. And I mean, I have a guide to making a magic system that's 10,000 words, right? All for free. And that magic system isn't something that you think about when you're writing your first fantasy book, or it's not something you know the details about. Right. So be proactive and just admit to yourself that it's your first book. You need to learn. I'm on my sixth book now. I still have a lot of stuff to learn, and I continue to learn all the time.
Yeah. So. Well, it's a what's the little flippant phrase? It's not a destination. It's the journey. It's the
journey. Yeah, that's exactly it.
I think we're spiraling into platitudes now, so it's probably time to wrap this up. I hope you've enjoyed this this discussion. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with a new Fireside Chat, where we will, dig up some great hot takes and hope that that you get something from them. Doug, as always, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Hank.
That's our episode for today. There's so much more to come as we talk to authors about the craft of writing, but also the business of publishing. Be sure to subscribe to the Storycraft Cafe podcast in your favorite podcast app so that you never miss an episode. The Storycraft Cafe is made possible by Dabble. Writing a book is challenging. Your writing tool should not be. Dabble is an easy-to-use online writing tool packed with helpful features that allow beginning novelists and published authors to create amazing stories. Visit us at dabblewriter.com and start your free trial today. Thanks for listening.